It is time for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger. Marshall's the editor and the publisher of the Timberjay newspaper, serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall joins us now. Morning, Marshall.
Good morning, Heidi.
Thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
So I think we need to start off with the big, huge story of last Friday, where Congressman Nolan stepped out of the race for District 8. And we were talking this week with our DFL commentator, Colleen Nardone, a little bit more on this, on who is running now. And I especially want to talk to you because we've heard from you in the past about Leah Pfeiffer's race and the things that she is standing for. And now, what is it like for her with Nolan out? She was facing quite the uphill battle with the incumbent there.
Yeah, and I still think it's going to be certainly a contest. In just the last week, we've had at least two candidates jump in, Joe Radinovich from the Crosby area, and then Kirsten Hagan Kennedy, the mayor of North Branch. So, you know, there's going to be more competition in the race. I know that Jason Metza, state representative from Virginia, is also considering a possible race, and it wouldn't surprise me if somebody from the Mesabi range, you know, jumps into it. If it's not Jason, it could be somebody else. So I think there's going to be a pretty hot contest here. I suspect that Leah Pfeiffer may have a bit of an advantage just because she did do quite well in the precinct caucuses, so that may translate into a better shot for her anyway to obtain the endorsement, which could help. Not to say that there wouldn't be a primary contest in this situation. It's certainly possible that there will be. So it certainly changed the dynamic of the race. I would say Pfeiffer probably has a stronger chance now than she did before, but it's not a lock by any means.
What do you think are the biggest issues for District 8?
Well, you know, frankly, I think all the candidates are going to be fairly similar on a lot of the sort of bread and butter issues, the basic economics. What was clear as far as an agenda, I mean, you know, a candidate who was very popular, I think, in the 8th District initially was Bernie Sanders. I mean, he did extremely well in the precinct caucuses back for the 2016 race. So I think, you know, sort of his agenda, economic populist agenda, is going to be popular in the 8th. And I think that's one of the reasons that Trump did well in the 8th, was because basically he ran on an economic populist agenda, and Clinton didn't. And I think that made the difference. So I think that's sort of the political persuasion that candidates look for, or that voters look for here. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's going to be a winning ticket again, you know, this time around. You know, the one problem I think that the DFL has right now, of course, is the division on the issue of copper nickel mining. And that's been, you know, a factor. You definitely saw that, I think, in the 8th District race, as well as in the results in the gubernatorial side in the precinct caucus, where you had Rebecca Otto, who's come out as opposed to the copper nickel development. She actually won in the gubernatorial straw poll in the 8th. And she did extremely well up in our area, you know, where the copper nickel mining would be happening. I think in the 3rd Senate District, she won more votes in that straw poll than all the other candidates combined. So that's a big issue. It's certainly been an issue with Leah Pfeiffer as well. She has not come out against those developments. She has indicated that she wanted the process to play out, you know, as it was supposed to. And I think that was where Congressman Nolan kind of ran into trouble, I think, with some of the DFL base, was when he kind of was advancing legislation that was kind of short-circuiting the process there, and was, you know, trying to advance some of those projects without, you know, having the opportunity for various groups to kind of weigh in through the courts and through other processes that were, you know, that are established. And so I think that was kind of when he ran into some trouble, lost a fair amount of support within the party. What's interesting is, you know, if you look across this area, I think generally there's support for the new mining projects, but that's not as true when you actually just ask DFLers. The DFL is very divided, even up here, on that issue, and I think that's playing out, and that's going to be a continuing problem, I think, for the party in the 8th District.
So officially, it's Joe Radinovich has announced his candidacy to run in the DFL for District 8, as well as Mayor Kirsten Kennedy from North Branch and Leah Pfeiffer. Is there one more, did you say? Official? Or?
Well, Jason Mezza has indicated that he's thinking about it, but he hasn't made a firm commitment, at least as of this moment.
Okay, this is an ongoing story. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Even by the even by the time we talk next week, it'll be different, I think.
I'm sure it will be.
All right, Marshall, let's move into another story you've been covering. You've been covering for a long time, actually, bringing up this topic. There's an investigation that is opening into Frontier Communications. For those of us who might not know Frontier, who are they and what are the issues there?
Well, it's a major telecommunications company. It serves, you know, customers all across the U.S., and they do have service territory up in our neck of the woods, various parts of northern Minnesota. They have some large areas of urban territory, and they also have some, you know, sort of obscure or remote rural territory that they serve. And that's where they've been experiencing, I think, a lot of problems and complaints. And we've certainly seen that up in our area. You know, we've had problems with the quality of service. You know, the internet, you know, is very erratic, cuts in, cuts out. Sometimes it cuts out for hours or days at a time for various, you know, both residential and business customers, which is a huge problem. And also billing practices have been just a continuous source of irritation for residents in our area and businesses. I mean, we've beat our head against the wall here at our office a number of times with Frontier. You know, you buy a service, they promise you one price, and then the bill comes and it's never right. And so people spend a lot of time on the phone trying to get these things cleared up, and then, you know, the next month it's the same thing all over again. So people spend a lot of time with the customer service people at Frontier trying to get bills straightened out, and it's really a source of frustration. And it takes on a pattern where it almost looks predatory. So we've been reporting on this. We had a fairly extensive story on the situation. Actually, we had asked people to write in to us about some of the experiences they've been having with Frontier, and then we did an extensive report on that back in November, and that apparently prompted the Public Utilities Commission then to go back and look at just how many complaints they had received over the past year about Frontier, and it turned out it was a large volume. So as a result of that, they announced this week that they're opening an investigation, and the Department of Commerce will be looking into that, as well as the Attorney General's office, and they'll be issuing a preliminary report in May, and then it's also open for public comment up until May 25th. So if people want to, you know, contact the Department of Commerce, and they've set up a docket, which is it's basically a publicly accessible location online where you can, you know, get information. You can find out, you can actually see the investigation reports as they come in. They'll be posted there, and then people can comment on them and comment on their experiences with Frontier. And we'll have that online if people want to go to our website. Otherwise, they can also email comments to consumer.puc@state.min.us. And it might be best to, you know, check out our story at timberjay.com on this, and it'll have more information if people would like to, you know, make comments.
All right, Marshall, very interesting story. I want to move into now about some rare woodpeckers that have been sighted in your area. What are they?
Well, the one that's particularly rare is the American three-toed woodpecker, but we actually have two species of three-toed woodpeckers. Now, you might wonder, what's a three-toed woodpecker? Well, most woodpeckers have four toes. The three-toed woodpeckers have three. There's only two species in North America that are three-toed, the black-backed woodpecker, which is found kind of through a lot of northern Minnesota, far northern Minnesota, northeastern Minnesota. It's more common, but then the American three-toed is quite uncommon. It's a very localized species, and we happen to find a large population of them, at least large for this species, at least several individuals, living in an area right near our house on the edge of the Lost Lake Swamp. And it turns out it was an area of black spruce and tamarack that was recently flooded by beaver, and all the trees died, and that attracted bark beetles, because bark beetles really like those species of trees, and they were starting to feed then on the dead trees, and that attracted these woodpeckers, which specialize on feeding on bark beetles and their larvae. And they don't drill holes like most woodpeckers. They feed simply by flaking the bark off of these dead trees. And I noticed this one day when I was out just poking around in the woods, and as I saw the workings, I knew what this, you know, that these were either black-backed or these American three-toes. I started looking around and started finding both species, and it turns out there's quite a few of them in there. And these are popular enough among birders that we had people last weekend, when the word got out about this, we had about a dozen people that we took out there and to see these birds, and they got, you know, looks at both species. They're very excited about these birds, and we have more people coming out this weekend as well. To take a look, and these birds kind of just move across the landscape, especially these American three-toes, because they're so specialized in feeding on these dead trees. So, you know, if you don't have a lot of these dead trees around, you're not going to have these birds. And these birds are very specialized. They're not like a, you know, a hairy or downy woodpecker or a pileated that's going to, you know, a lot of times they'll come to your bird feeder if you put suet out or things like that. These birds aren't going to show up at your bird feeder. You got to go out in their specific habitat to find them. I would to describe them, they're about the size of a hairy woodpecker, the males have a yellow cap on their heads. The female American three-toed actually looks quite a bit like a hairy woodpecker, whereas the black-backed is distinct because it has an entirely black back, just a deep black back. They're kind of an impressive bird with that. Other than that, they've been really fun to watch. I've been going out most mornings just to check them out, and they are just very reliable. They're living in this area. They're there all the time. They feed there, and when they're not feeding, they're just resting on the side of a tree. So it's something we're going to keep watching. They've probably been in this area for about a year, it looks like, from just the extensive amount of stripped bark off these trees. And there's still quite a bit of bark remaining, so I'm suspecting they could be in there for months, if not another year or two, until they probably have that food source eliminated, and then they'll move on to the next food source like this. But generally, these species will follow either areas that have been flooded like this and killed off the trees, or they'll feed in areas where the trees are have been burned, or where they're just, you know, have had an insect invasion that killed them off. And basically, their range is the taiga. Live across Canada, all the way, actually, they're circumpolar. They go all the way over to Asia. Kind of Siberia and Scandinavia, so that's kind of the story about these woodpeckers. They're pretty interesting, though.
Yeah, so they're the American three-toed woodpecker?
Is correct. That right? Yep, then the black-backed woodpecker. It used to be called the black-backed three-toed woodpecker, but they dropped three-toed, and okay. I'm not exactly sure why. But.
You're making them sound so mysterious since they're so much quieter than the woodpeckers that might be on my deer carcass outside my window.
You have to kind of listen closely when you get out there to hear them. They're not nearly as noisy as these other, our usual woodpeckers.
All right. Can we see a photo in the paper?
There are photos in the paper.
All right.
And there are photos on our website as well.
All right. You can find it at timberj.com. That's Marshall Helmberger. This is the Border News Roundup. Check in with you next week, Marshall.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.